Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care. Nahastan aniva nijone go shabothya, nijone go shabothya. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Of America, whose blood will flow like water to nourish prophet's crop. Somewhere near the edge of America, who's gonna feed on sugar and junk, a hungry mouth will eat anything. Edge of America, edge of America. Somewhere near the edge of America, whose sister is a battered woman, battered. daughter by a better man. Somewhere near the edge of America, who's got less today than yesterday, don't even want to think about tomorrow. Edge of America, our lives, we don't all have to
Anishinaabe singer-songwriter Annie Humphrey's title song from her CD, Edge of America, from Macoshay Music. I chose that song, Edge of America, as a descriptive voice for many of the social and economic concerns we hear Yakutishi Native Center worry about. Issues of poverty, of racial discrimination, environmental justice, health care, human rights, and many other issues poor people and people of color must deal with every day as we struggle to live on the edge of America. This is why Yakutishi Native Center has been working for years in community organizing and intertribal and multicultural coalition building. We believe in the innate dignity and diversity of all peoples. We are dedicated to promoting the eradication of all forms of prejudice, violence, discrimination, hatred, racism, and globalization. Yakutishi Native Center encourages active participation in educating all peoples toward the development of a more inclusive and respectful world community. One of the gifts of doing this Earth Justice work is meeting very fine people who share these concerns and visions as well. In today's program, Wolf Mountain Radio is honored to introduce you to two such persons, Noelia and Robert Rodriguez. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yakutishi Native Center. Ashkwe greetings. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Wolf Mountain Native Radio on Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, Global Radio for Peace International. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. I'm here in our studio on a very beautiful afternoon, and this is the time that the sun is getting ready to set. And earlier I saw some swallowtail kites flying around outside the studio window, so I knew it was going to be a very nice and special day. In the studio, I have two guests, and as is the custom of Wolf Mountain Native Radio, I always prefer to have them introduce themselves so they are represented in the way they are most comfortable with. I will just mention that their names is Noelia and her husband, Robert, and perhaps as a brief comment, they live here in what is now called Southwest Florida, as we do, in what Seminole and Miccosukee call this homeland, Pahayogi. How I know them is from my participation and involvement in a number of Southwest Florida peace and environmental justice concerns. And that's about all I will say and let them introduce themselves. So we say, Ashkwe, greetings, welcome, and thank you for being on Wolf Mountain Native Radio. And let me just pass the microphone over to you, Robert.
Hi, I'm Robert. I was born in Florida, in fact. My chief interest, I guess I could say, well, among others, includes health and nutrition. I think like many others who develop an interest in those topics, can be something that evolves slowly or something that one realizes all of a sudden based on an experience or an event or even a crisis. In my case, and in Noelia's case, I guess, we originally were interested in nutrition and related topics based on health concerns, optimizing one's health. I think, though, over the years that progress we made in terms of what we eat, how we think of health, expanded from there to a realization of where our food comes from, who produces it, how do they produce it, how is food marketed around the world, and eventually evolved into a more ethical point of view, which is that anything related to food as much as related to land and air and sea and forest, and especially as relates to oneself, all has an ethical component. And when one develops that ethical component and brings it back to those issues of health, then I think one creates a very useful circle that encourages, provides a point of view that is more comprehensive than just looking at those issues very abstractly.
My name is Noelia, and ever since I can remember, I've been interested in the food one eats and whether it's organic, and whether one eats animals or not. Initially, we became interested in vegetarianism for health reasons. As time passed, we developed such a love for other beings and animals. I just cannot conceive nowadays that I would kill an animal to eat it, especially that there's so much food readily available in our Western society in modern times today, and there's no need to kill animals, and let alone to do factory farming of animals where the animals are suffering so much and being abused and given all kinds of chemicals and hormones. It just saddens me tremendously to feel that I'm going to make another sentient being suffer if I was to eat them. I would make another sentient being go through so much suffering when I really don't need to eat them, and when in reality, according to a lot of my research, one actually is healthier if one doesn't eat animals, because animals have a lot of saturated fat. Us as humans do not need to consume any saturated fat or cholesterol. In fact, our livers produce all the cholesterol that we need to process the hormones of the body. So our bodies have absolutely no need of saturated fat or cholesterol. And it becomes a great burden. And then in our society today, you see why most people over 50 have to take drugs to reduce their cholesterol, when it could actually be done so well and so readily by just not consuming animal products. For example, when we used to consume cheese and eggs, which we were not vegan then. We were vegetarian but not vegan. At the time, my cholesterol was like 217, and I never overate. It was just from eating eggs occasionally and cheese and so forth. After we became vegans, and that is, vegan means that one eats, well, technically it means that one eats a plant-based diet, no animal products whatsoever. Well, after we became vegan 10 years ago, my cholesterol and that of my husband have been on the 140 to 150 level, which, according to a lot of research, that's the ideal level of cholesterol. In fact, in Massachusetts, there was a study done many years ago, and the study went on for like 30 or 40 years. Can't recall now the name of the study, but it's a famous one, and it's cited by many scientists, and it's cited in the book of John Robbins, Diet for a New American Food Revolution also. In this study, no one who had a cholesterol level of 150 or less ever suffered a heart attack, even under the most strenuous conditions. There have been studies too, like in Germany, when the bombing that there was in World War II, that there was such tremendous suffering and stress, they found that actually there were fewer heart attacks than in normal times. And the reason, it appears to be because people were not consuming animal products, and they actually had less cholesterol in their blood.
Session in our first interview segment commented on the serious issue of multinational agribusiness ever expanding influence and control over global agriculture and world food trade. We also talked a little bit about the threat of GMOs, genetically modified animal and plant organisms, and how much of so-called modern agriculture is big business factory farming. This industrial agricultural system, as you two know, is very, very biologically harmful to the land and our environment. This corporate farming system, which has displaced many excellent sustainable farming practices and traditional communities, is based on having to use incredible amounts of petrochemical fertilizers, herbicides, insecticides. In many parts of North America and the world, this industrial agricultural plantation farming also requires huge amounts of precious and often very rare amounts of water. Loss of soil fertility, soil erosion, and pollution from agricultural runoff are very serious problems impacting our planet. Many large-scale agricultural enterprises have been responsible for deforestation and expanding desertification throughout the world. In our first discussion segment, Noelia, you spoke about animal rights and the cruelty of animal production, livestock raising, which I agree with you. We here at Yad Kiddushin Native Center consider animal rights a very important issue to fight for. I also mentioned my concern as a native person, the importance of animal rights activists and conservationists to respect indigenous peoples throughout the world who in our cultural life ways still live with and off the land by hunting and fishing. I appreciate the both of you expressing your respect of this Aboriginal right and way of life that has reverence for our animal and plant relations. I would like to now bring up the subject of nutrition, especially the issue of why so many North Americans seem to be so misinformed. Noelia, you mentioned the book and video Diet for a New America by John Robbins, which is excellent. Sadly, many American Indians and indigenous peoples throughout the world now suffer serious illnesses such as diabetes and poor nutrition. Prior to colonial rule over our homelands, we indigenous peoples were very healthy people. We ate fresh, nutritious foods that we gathered, hunted, and fished in a ceremonial way. We grew fine organic gardens with prayers. Unfortunately, even if we native peoples wished to return to our traditional food sources, much of this would be hard to do since our sacred lands and waters have been contaminated and polluted like so much of Mother Earth. I'm glad to mention that there is a growing eco-agricultural movement among native and non-native peoples throughout the world that focuses on environmentally, socioeconomic, sustainable land use and farming, that not only cares for the land, but provides healthy food for people in a manner that promotes rural communities and environmental social justice. Noelia, would you share some thoughts on this question and on nutrition?
Yes, I think the beef industry and dairy industry have been very influential in forming that pyramid in terms of how one should eat, that it should be so-called balanced, including all the food groups. But really their main emphasis is in the flesh and the dairy. And there is really no scientific basis today at all, you know, absolutely none, to justify that one needs to eat from the dairy and the flesh group. And yet you see that still today that's what's being taught in schools. And there's no doubt in my mind that the reason for that has been because of the lobbying of the beef and the dairy industry and their incredible power in this country. You know how one even sees in the U.S. advertising or commercials for eating egg. Yeah, the incredible egg. And actually, that's completely false. You know, nobody benefits from eating egg. One egg has like around 200 milligrams of cholesterol, and nobody needs that. Our livers produce all the cholesterol we need. Our intestine is very long, which was designed like that for consuming and the breaking down and digesting of lots of vegetables and fruit. The animals, you know, that are more flesh eaters, like dogs, for example, their intestine is very short. They have fangs, and we don't have any of that. So another angle that we haven't talked about is the sustainability. And you know how today one sees some Westerners calling themselves environmentalists, and yet they will consume flesh, you know, beef and chicken and animal products. That's such a contradiction, because in terms of sustainability, it takes 12 pounds of grains to produce 1 pound of beef. And in terms of the depletion of the aquifers and the deforestation, so from an environmental point of view, eating animal products is not sustainable at all. You know, I'm addressing this from the angle of modern Western men, and more from the scientific point of view. And previously, Robert discussed, you know, how the Native Americans ate animals, but it was more sort of a ritual, and it was expressive of their love for the earth and nature.
Ah!
This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker, and I have two very special guests in the studio today, and we're having just a very nice general conversation about things of concern. And one concern that Yad Kiddushin Native Center has is trying to first build coalitions among and between people of color and mainstream environmental community, and also how we can help, when I use the term educate, mainstream North American people who in many ways need to wake up very quickly because of the serious situations facing Mother Earth and the future well-being of wildlife on the planet. And without being too condescending, it's very important to say that most of our lifestyles, and I include myself in this comment, who live in North America, live a lifestyle that's really at the expense of many people throughout the world, the rural, third world people, the poor, and poor people in America as well. And that's why I try wherever I can to recycle as much as I can, try to minimize the amount of electricity I use in my home and my transportation. But even that, I'm constantly aware of just living in North America, what biological impact I have on the planet. And so I'm trying to really focus on working with American people so that they learn more respect about nature, and also that they learn that wisdom comes not just from your American scientist or the Anglo paradigm of Western education, but from wisdom of the elders from all the other important cultures of the world that usually whose voices are not often heard. So I'm just going to throw that out and ask you, Noelia, to share any thoughts you might have.
Yes, I notice that the major environmental organizations such as Sierra Club, they don't address very much the fact that in rural areas in America, there are so many of these enormous corporate farms that use a large amount of pesticide, herbicides, and they're constantly polluting the soil and the air in particular of poor people. You know, a lot of them are minorities who live in these rural areas, and a lot of the children who live in rural areas have problems with the allergies and in particular asthma. One never sees the Sierra Club, for example, address that. They may condemn perhaps the use of pesticide up to a certain level, but they don't really address the fact that it directly impacts the poor who live in rural areas. And I know in particular I can identify with this because we live in Southwest Florida. 10 years ago, we built a house in Eastern Collier County that was rural. It was pretty much rural, this area then. And we built our house as sustainably as we could at the time, and we chose not to have central air conditioning or any air conditioning at all. I know how we had a lot of windows designed throughout the structure so that we could have the breeze come in. So when we first moved in, our son was 4 years old, and we used to sleep with the windows wide open. Each bedroom had two windows, and with a fan, we had a nice breeze, and it was just delightful in the evenings. One day, we didn't know, well, actually about 3 miles from us, there are enormous corporate farms, and we are downwind from them. When we built our house in this area, we were not aware that the air would be polluted by these corporate farms. We were not aware that this pesticide would travel 3 miles downwind. So we were very ignorant of this. So one day, I woke up at 5 a.m., there was such a horrible smell inside the house of pesticide. And I remember I could even taste it on my lips. My tongue even stung. For a moment, we didn't know, and yet we are pretty much educated on pesticides and so forth, but we were so ignorant regarding how this pesticide would travel downwind. The most shocking thing about this was that within 12 hours, our 4-year-old son, who had never had any allergies, who had been in perfect health, developed horrible wheezing and asthma. He couldn't breathe, and this was within 12 hours. Well, the next day I took him to the pediatrician, and I explained the smell, that it had to be pesticide, and he said, well, either you move out of there or become an activist. And he gave my son an inhaler to use, and for the next 3 weeks, my son had horrible asthma attacks every evening. I remember not sleeping and being next to him, and we were just devastated. And then I decided to go to a health food store, and a lady there told me, well, don't give him any animal products, take away the dairy, so that, and give him this particular herb so that his liver will detoxify from these pesticides, and I think you will see an improvement. I tell you, this was like a miracle, because it was exactly like that. I took away all the dairy and whatever meats he would eat, which was at the time turkey, but especially the dairy, and we decided he would go vegan. Well, after like a week, we could see an improvement. The asthma attacks were not so intense, and there was a gradual improvement like that until about, like, for the next 3 months, and then it got to the point he didn't need to take any medicine. He would not cough or vomit in the evenings, as he had been doing after the asthma attacks. And this was such an eye-opener for us at that time, was when we also decided, well, if veganism and eating a plant-based diet is good for Michael, and eating organically, then definitely has to be good for us and for everyone in the family. And, you know, we extrapolated from there too, and it must be good for everyone in general.
When you introduce yourself, you mentioned that you were born and raised here in what's now called the state of Florida. As you spoke, I was thinking about many of the changes you have witnessed to this very special part of Mother Earth that our Seminole and Miccosukee Indian French term, Pahayogi, more commonly known as the Everglades. This subtropical region is a unique intermix of habitats that form a wondrous web of life. Wetland cypress forests, hardwood hammocks, deep water swamps, meandering creeks, wetland marshes, seasonal wet and dry grass prairies, pine palmetto uplands, river systems, coastal mangroves, barrier islands, marine estuaries, coastal dunes, and beach ecosystems together make up this very special environment. I have been privileged to live here now some 15 years. Many of those years I worked as a field biologist in trying to protect this fragile part of Mother Earth. As a community activist, I have long been fighting to defend endangered species and promote environmental justice, both nationally and here in Florida. Also, as you know, I am a curriculum advisor and lecturer in environmental and sustainable education at Florida Gulf Coast University, where I try to teach Earth ethics to our next generation, who will be responsible for the state of our planet. I mention all this because I am quite concerned and upset about what I am seeing happening here in the name of so-called development. Southwest Florida is one of the fastest growing regions in the country. So-called environmental laws and growth management regulations are overrun by developers. A recent National Ornithology Study reports that bird populations have declined 90% here in Florida. Recently, our regional newspaper published a series focused on the declining health of the Gulf of Mexico. I could cite statistics about the collapse of fisheries or the threatened state of marine mammals in our area. Less than 100 years ago, this region had beautiful forests that underwent an incredible devastation from logging ancient cypress trees that has never yet been recovered. The historical fiasco of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers changing the hydrology of the Everglades is still a legacy we are trying to correct. Agricultural land use changes and expansion over the years, plus incredible urbanization of the state, has created enormous problems such as pollution and the destruction of wildlife habitat, where many now endangered plant animal species once lived free and in abundance. I could go on, but I know you get the point. Florida, in many ways, is a microcosm of the world. The ecological, social, cultural, demographic, economic, and political conditions in many ways exemplify the situation of environment versus development all over the globe. Robert, as someone who has also witnessed many devastating and destructive changes to this part of Mother Earth, what are your thoughts about this subject?
Well, what you said, Ron, is about the nature of Southwest Florida is certainly true. And having grown up in Florida, I've certainly seen those changes, but I imagine that those changes exist throughout most of the U.S., especially as cities turn into sprawl throughout the natural environment around them. It seems that anything environmental is going to end up going back to the economic values of the given culture. And if the primary interest of people is to consume, then they're bound to consume their natural resources around them and those of the rest of the world if they can. So our question, I guess, would be whether there is some hope in not only the progress of environmental groups, but groups that are observing the nature of the culture and where it's taking us. If the same people who are working on environmental issues are nevertheless not much different from the other typical consumers in our culture, then it's not likely that environmental issues will make much progress under their tutelage, really. A lot of where they come from is preservation and conservation, primarily for maybe aesthetic reasons. Some of the ecotourism has always seemed to me to be partly aesthetics rather than any genuine environmental sustainability. Perhaps that would be a short-term, at any rate, way of making some progress. But I think the issues that really have to be addressed have to do with the nature of the culture and what the values of that culture are. And undoubtedly the predominant values are consumption. There are simplicity movements around that sometimes end up thinking of simplicity as again, an aesthetic thing rather than really an economic issue. Here's where a lot of the traditional cultures around the world are the only ones that are sustaining not just the ideas, the concepts of simplicity and a closer relationship to nature, but they're actually living it as much as they are being allowed to the degree that they survive, and to the degree that the majority culture takes an interest in them and takes them seriously and not just a kind of historical novelties. That's where that insight's going to come. For example, I think of myself as fairly well read in the classics of Western civilization, but more and more I'm interested in the classics of the rest of the world, because we've seemed to have exhausted how many more millennia do we have under Western cultural values to go before we just either implode environmentally or explode nuclear. It seems that it's tied into science, to technology, to economics, and all the cultural, social angles that involves. I don't know that one can save the planet more than one person at a time, and at least that's where 100% of our responsibility can be, which is each individual. By becoming an example of what we want the world to be, to paraphrase Gandhi, I think that's where we can begin to make progress. A lot of the progressive and countercultural movements in the U.S. have been largely inspired by the same techniques that were used in historical past, which was fomenting dissent and even violence at least agitation, only to replace that with some sort of equivalent. What needs to be done, it seems, is to take the time to simplify one's life, to look at the cultural origins of that simplicity and to see that it exists throughout the world, that it's not necessary to continue to try to extrapolate old ideas, and instead to look at the ideas that were there originally. The old ideas, ironically, are the ideas of Western culture that are pretty much exhausting themselves, if not the rest of the world. The ideas that have maintained the sustainability, the simplicity, the harmony, the balance with nature, with the universe, are those of the historical peoples that continue to try to eke out their existence. Hopefully the majority culture will respect them long enough so that they can actually learn something from those peoples.
You are listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kedetshi Native Center. Yat Kedetshi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat Kedetshi Native Center is an intertribal culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat Kedetshi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their world views in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat Kedetshi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat Kedetshi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat Kedetshi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat Kedetshi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat Kedetshi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat Kedetshi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat Kedetshi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat Kedetshi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat Kedetshi's Kinonwatakwisi Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yat Kedetshi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Please write us for our catalog of audio tapes available for purchase. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yat Kedetshi Native Center, write to Yat Kedetshi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yat Kedetshi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakusin, to all of our relations.
Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Native Radio. And I really, again, want to thank our guests today, Robert and Noelia Rodriguez, here in the studio. The music you heard prior to our public service announcement was a very fine song from Grant Severite entitled Indian Nations. And that was a contemporary Native American song from Music from Turtle Island, Turtle Island Music CDs. And of course, we also heard a song, an intertribal drum song from Youngberg Drum from Canyon Records, Voices Across the Canyon, Volume 4. We're going to conclude with another listener request, that is Mary Youngblood, a Native American flutist. This particular song requested is entitled Loon Dance, and is from her very beautiful Heart of the World CD, of course, from our friends at Silver Wave Records. And for you worldwide listeners, the loon is a very special water bird to us North American Native peoples. Until the next Wolf Mountain Native Radio program, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker, thanking you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, on Radio for Peace International. Ho, Kanan Wantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Thank you.